Indeed, here I am. My guest is Robert Bob Kuntz, and Bob has impeccable credentials, a PhD degree in experimental nuclear physics at the University of Maryland, staff scientist at Lawrence Berkeley, and so forth. And he saw something he can't explain, as did I. This changes your life. In his case, though, he was uniquely positioned to begin researching and then experimenting with anti-gravity, which he has done. He mentioned a man, Stan Meyer, who has demonstrated that you can get a car to run on water. That's right, convert to hydrogen and run on water. I've heard similar claims made, actually, believe it or not, by a man here in the Philippines who I believe now and still is running around Metro Manila somewhere with a car that runs on water. Now, if this is true, if it's real, then it would go a long way towards saving the world, wouldn't it? What's our problem right now? Pollution. We're destroying the planet. We all know that. The ice caps are melting. A lot of really, really nasty things are going on. So if we could all prove this, yes, we could change the world. We might not be able to rise up and out of the atmosphere just yet in something that defies gravity, but we surely could change the world. More in a moment. Well, all right, once again, Bob Kuntz. Bob, you mentioned somebody, Stan Meyer, who, before he passed, did demonstrate, I guess, successfully a patent. Is that correct? Demonstrating that you can run a car on hydrogen, on water?
Yes, Stan Meyer. I have 7 of his patents on my website. Okay, now he demonstrated at least one of them, I'm not sure, maybe more, to the patent examining board that he could make hydrogen at a very fast rate, so fast that he could power a car with it. Now, let me stop here and say that most scientists would say that's impossible because they would say that it takes more energy to do this than you get out. The law of energy conservation. Mm-hmm. Okay, now, the problem is that these scientists, these physicists, do not take into consideration the possibility of gauge transformations, something called gauge transformations. Excuse me. You may recall when John Hutchinson did his experiments, I said that he used canceling electromagnetic waves.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know about the law of energy conservation. Now, generally,
yes,
People say that energy is neither created nor destroyed.
Right.
But that is not a very good way to say the law of energy conservation. What we should say is that the total energy of a closed system is constant. Now, what that means is that you can make one unit of positive energy as long as you make a unit of negative energy at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And our scientists do not take into consideration the possibility that negative energy is being produced because they don't know about something called scalar waves, which also could be called gauge waves. Okay, now, in the case of Stan Meyer, I believe he found a resonance, a scalar resonance or a gauge resonance in copper and in water that produced negative energy scalar waves that allowed him to gain positive energy to break up the water into hydrogen and oxygen, and then he ran his car on hydrogen and oxygen.
Okay, so this automobile was being run on nothing but the converted water to hydrogen. Is that correct? In other words, there was no additional hydrogen introduced to do it.
That's correct.
Now,
I was saying that if you were to go find this fellow in the Philippines, this older gentleman,
Are you aware of that story, by the way?
Yes, I am. I've seen the video on the internet, and it's pretty convincing. Now, everyone, these skeptics that say it's a fake, they always say it's a fake, no matter what it is. They'll probably say my pictures are a fake. I don't know. But we can't let these people stand in our way. If you were to find that fellow and go look at it, you have enough knowledge about mechanics and electronics to make a determination if it's a fake or not. And they had people there that unplugged one thing and another, and it sure does look like that fellow was also using this possible gauge resonance to make energy.
Well, Bob, I do have some knowledge, but I can't put myself in your position. I don't have the kind of credentials you have. Yes, I know something about electronics and something about physics, but I don't know that I could go to this man, see what he's doing, and, you know, declare it is so. I could try, but I don't know that I have the credentials to do that.
Suppose he has a line running from his system that has water in it to the carburetor, and you unplug that line, and the engine shuts off. If you went over there yourself and took that hose and pulled it loose, and that stopped the engine, you would probably say make the reasonable assumption that the source for that engine's power was coming through that line.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and you could see whether there's any gasoline line coming into that carburetor.
I could. What I wouldn't be sure of is whether there was some other source of hydrogen being introduced at a point where I couldn't see it. Now, I mean, there's a lot of things you could worry about. I hate to be such a skeptic, but I am. And
I still claim that you could do it.
Well, I could try.
I think you could.
Maybe I will try, Bob. Maybe I will try.
That'd be wonderful.
In the meantime, you do have the credentials. You have done the experiments. In fact, you could probably move from what you're doing now to also trying to create a car that runs on essentially water. Have you considered that?
Art, to tell you the truth, I don't have any more the mechanical ability to make the kind of things that are needed to be made in order to produce that device. Now, I have friends that are working on this. There are people around the world who are working on hydrogen fuel cells. They are able to produce hydrogen in various instances, and I'd like to give them additional information about the scalar resonance that they need to learn about. I believe it's at 6 kilohertz.
Oh, my.
That's a critical frequency. It's 6 kilohertz. You can calculate it from quantum physics, but people have to understand that this scalar resonance involves not only the hot water, but also the copper. The whole system has to engage in a gauge transformation, as it's called.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not as simple. I mean, if you get this thing figured out just right, it's pretty simple. But getting it to work exactly right isn't always that easy.
Okay. Well, again, though, you do have, obviously, you have the kind of background it takes to get the attention of other scientists, Bob. Have you attempted to do that? And if so, what kind of greeting do you get?
If I talk, there are a few scientists that listen to me, but they're mostly guerrilla physicists. I have a friend across the street here who's a guerrilla physicist. That is to say, he's being shunned by the mainstream physics community because his ideas don't necessarily fall in line. For instance, this fellow is a general relativist. That is to say, he's an expert in Einstein's general theory of relativity. And he's formulated a possible alternative to the Big Bang hypothesis, but people won't listen. For instance, a number of years ago, I wrote a paper. I spent about 6 months or a year working on the thing. I sent it off to the Astrophysical Journal. I said that the total energy of the universe is zero, which kind of makes sense if you want to create a universe from nothing. Well, I set the energy equal to zero. Well, the editor didn't even send the paper out. He said he could see that the total energy of the universe is not zero. He said he could see that stars are hot. But he didn't recognize that energy can take negative forms, too. For instance, the attractive force of gravity is a negative energy, is a form of negative energy. Okay, so now there's a case. I spent a year of my time and, effort and all that and nothing. And so there is a – if you mention – for instance, Michio Kaku was on here with you and or George Norrie, and Michio Kaku said that free energy is impossible. He said he has investors call him up every day, and he tells them it's impossible. But Dr. Kaku, as fine a man as he is, and I believe he's a very good man and a brilliant physicist, he does not understand that we have ignored the Gates transformations that we know can violate, that can change the electromagnetic energy of a system.
All right. Well, you're now talking to, obviously, many credentialed people out there, and you have the opportunity to tell them where to take their experiments and demonstrate exactly what you're talking about. And so you said that that negative energy is, you mentioned 10 kilohertz, was that correct?
6 kilohertz. There are various frequencies for these scalar resonances, and 6 kilohertz is one of those. That's also exploited by a fellow named Stephen Mark, who kind of has mysteriously disappeared. I don't know what happened to him. I tell you, Art, I don't go for these conspiracy theories unless I'm forced to. Now, I don't know what happened to the man, but he had a nice little TPU unit, toroidal power unit, that was putting out hundreds of watts, and it was just a little thing. And it's not a fake, I tell you, because the guy named Jack Dunlap, an engineer and very respectable man, examined it, as did many other people. And so he was producing free energy, and then I guess around the year 2000, I don't know, he just sort of, and then he's gone. I don't know where he is. Maybe he's around.
Well, let's look at it. Let's look at it for just one moment, Bob. And that is to say, look, we've got large oil companies. We all know they rake in billions upon billions, if not trillions of dollars. Mm-hmm. And so obviously anything that would threaten their existence, the continued drilling, refinement and use of fossil fuels would be enough to... threaten them in a way that that would produce action if they truly felt threatened. So I'm not a big conspiracy guy either, but I can see how they would put their foot down in the middle of somebody's neck who was suggesting it could be done.
Okay, yeah. Listen, Art, this may be a good time for me to issue a challenge to the world's physics community, all those electrical engineers and physicists out there. I would like to know, you know what a photon is. It's an electromagnetic wave.
Yes.
Okay, now suppose you have two photons exactly identical to each other, except the electric and magnetic fields are 180 degrees out of phase.
Mm-hmm.
You superpose these two photons, one on top of the other, 180 degrees out of phase. The electric fields cancel and the magnetic fields cancel. So where is the original electromagnetic energy then? If there's no electric and magnetic fields, then the electromagnetic energy has gone to zero. But if you believe in energy conservation, you believe that energy had to go somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Now, where did the energy go? I want to know. You know, if someone can explain it to me. Now, this is without gauge transformations. If you put gauge transformations in there, yes, okay, that explains it. But those gauge waves are the very waves that physicists don't take into consideration. They do, and when they evaluate these free energy devices, they do not consider gauge transformations as being part of the system. So they say that only the electromagnetic interaction is necessary to consider, and they believe, because one physicist said it many, many years ago, he said that these gauge transformations don't do anything of consequence. People ever since have believed him, but he was wrong. A brilliant physicist by the name of Jackson, David Jackson. Brilliant man, but he made a mistake. And ever since, people have followed the party line, if you will, and they believe that electromagnetic energy is conserved when it isn't. So now, that comes back to scalar waves, scalar electromagnetic weapons. It comes back to John Hutchison when he has his canceling electromagnetic waves from Tesla coils. What does that do? When you cancel electromagnetic two photons, again, let's go back to that. If you cancel two photons, they have two canceling photons, where does the energy go and what does it do when it gets there?
Robert, you mentioned a couple of times weapons. Now, if there is indeed this form of energy, it's entirely possible the United States government and other governments may have figured it out and may be utilizing it in something that's been weaponized. And if that's the case, would it be your view that it's being withheld as a matter of, in quotes, national security, and being used, and we're not getting it, and the world is not being relieved of its terrible burdens right now because of somebody's weapon?
Okay, that's a possibility, Art. You could be right. I don't know for certain. I'm speculating, okay? So you could be right. It could be that the U.S. national security community, maybe Los Alamos or Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory or Sandia Labs or one of these national security labs, has knowledge about this. And it
Well, you were a staff scientist at Lawrence Berkeley Labs. During your tenure there, was there ever a suggestion that something like that was going on?
No.
No.
No. In fact, no. And so I would say it's possible, Art. I think the Russians have developed scalar electro, or did develop scalar electromagnetic weapons, and I've seen an instant, I've seen evidence that they have used them in the territorial United States over the skies as a weather modification, a form of weather modification. But I don't have any more evidence than that. Dr. Tom Bearden is the man who is an expert in that area. Dr. Bearden was one of the persons who influenced me early on in this area. I don't know if I agree with everything Dr. Bearden says. Some of the things that he says, I don't understand. I've studied them for hours and hours and hours, and I have my computer read to me his articles again and again, and I listen, and I don't understand them. Now, maybe he's right. I'm not going to say he's not. It's nonsense because I don't understand it. It could be very much that he's right, but I don't understand it all, and I can't say whether it's right or wrong. But he was a colonel. He's a retired colonel from the Army. And apparently he was somehow gained classified or gained information about these scalar electromagnetic weapons that the Soviets, then the Soviets, now would be the Russians, developed and used and modified the clouds over the sky of the United States. I've seen grid patterns that are very, very hard to explain in any conventional way. So I would say
a lot of people call those chemtrails. You mentioned chemtrails earlier.
No,
chemtrails.
This would be like imagine peaks and valleys and lines in the sky. I can send you an email with it, but this is definitely not a natural phenomena, and it appears to be some sort of technology. Dr. Bearden says that it's scalar electromagnetic weaponry from the Soviet. From then, that would be the Soviets. And now it would be the Russians.
Could be the Russians at one point, back when they were indeed the Soviets, offered to create a typhoon here in the Pacific in order to relieve some areas that were in very great danger as a result of not having any rain. The governments involved didn't take them up on it, but they claimed that from satellite they could create a typhoon, and offered to do so for X number of dollars.
I understand that to be the case. Now, I heard from one researcher that they did take the Russians up on that offer, and they did. Well, I don't know, but anyhow, you're definitely right. The story goes that the Russians offered to do that. Now, I can't say much about. I don't have any classified information, and I have very little unclassified information on these Soviet or Russian scalar electromagnetic weapons. But
right,
I do know. But wait, let me finish, Art, please.
I'd love to, but we're coming up on a break.
Okay.
So we'll pick it up right where we've left off.
Okay.
And I would like to suggest to the audience, if I might, that I'd love to get email from you. If you have an opportunity to fire me an email, I am artbell@mindspring.com. That's A-R-T-B-E-L-L, lowercase, at mindspring, M-I-N-D, spring.com. I try to answer all the email that I can. If I miss you, I'm terribly sorry, but I'm making my best effort. This is Coast to Coast AM. Here I am, and that song seems to fit right in. Simple minds, complicated things, and it's difficult for people to understand, but I, too, along with Dr. Greer and many others, think that there probably is a free energy solution out there, or an energy solution that's going to bail our butts out before we destroy the planet entirely. It's a matter of finding it, and then I suppose keeping it away from the people who would see it gone until every drop of oil is sucked from the earth and we have done as much destruction as we can. So it's worth pursuing. It certainly is worth pursuing. Bob Kuntz is pursuing it, and pretty hard, too. Once again, if you'd like to email me, I'd love to get an email from you. I'm artbell@mindspring.com. A-R-T-B-E-L-L at mindspring.com. We'll be right back. Bob, welcome back, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, but the clock is what it is, and we have to stop when it says so.
Okay, that's fine.
So, go right ahead.
Let's see, where was I? Okay, I issued a challenge to the world's physicists. I'd like to know how they explain two photons, two canceling photons. What happens to the electromagnetic energy that's originally in those photons? Where does it go? And the answer, I believe, and I'm pretty sure it's correct, is that it goes into production of scalar waves. But we in the West don't know much about scalar waves unless it's in a classified government program that I know nothing about. Now, I do think that the Russians, previously the Soviets, did know quite a bit about scalar electromagnetic radiation based on their knowledge of Nikola Tesla's work. Mm-hmm. So now I sent to you just now, or a few minutes ago, a picture from Tom Bearden's website that shows over the coast of California the effects of scalar electromagnetic waves from putative Soviet devices. So if Dr. Bearden is right, and I believe he's an honest man, a very honest man, then that's evidence for scalar electromagnetic radiation affecting.
Okay, I haven't seen the photograph yet, but I'm compelled to ask, how do you know that's what it is?
Well, you know, the choices are not that many. Basically, the electromagnetic interaction is the interaction we have engineering capability over. We can't really engineer gravity very much. We can move dirt around, but it's pretty hard to make waves in the sky moving dirt around. The nuclear interaction is short range, and this effect that I'm seeing in the sky over California in the picture of Dr. Bearden apparently is the result of the electrum of a long-range force, and presumably the electromagnetic interaction is involved. But I know of no way that the ordinary electromagnetic interaction would produce those waves. So I conclude that it is possibly scalar radiation from a...
Okay. Richard in Wisconsin writes to me, or fast blasts me, when two photons disappear, the energy, he says, converts to element 116, which is very unstable.
No comment.
No comment. All right. And then this from Steve in Boulder, Colorado. Steve says, what I find is amazing is that Dr. Kuntz, with all his credentials, passion, and claims, has not brought forth any working models himself of Murray's work in electron energy or that of the water fuel cells. Only then can he be proven correct.
Well, that's a good point, but I tell you, Art, it takes time. I started studying this 7 years ago. Sometimes I do my calculations. I work typically 16 hours a day, 7 days a week, and also there's a matter of money. I have used up most of my life savings in doing this, and I need to, I blew up my Hewlett-Packard oscilloscope the other day, and, you know, those things aren't cheap. So I blew that out, and I blew up a power supply. And sometimes you get power surges with this stuff that knocks everything out, and you know, it's inexplicable. And you go back and you use conventional electrodynamics, and you don't get the right answer. But later on, you think, well, maybe I hit something there. I hit the gold mine. I just didn't know that. I knocked out my scope, but actually I learned something from it. It takes time. Dr. Thomas Henry Moray, Stan Meyer spent 15 years got many patents. And where is his idea? He died in 1997, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens to these ideas? And listen, I'll tell you something else. Even if you get to the point where you get a patent, that doesn't mean that you're going to make money. That doesn't mean you're going to get recognition, because the U.S. government, if it wants to stamp national security on a patent, it's gone.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
You can forget it.
So, all right. Yeah. Let's touch on a couple of other things. What do you know about HARP?
Okay. HARP is I'm not an expert on HARP, but I do believe I know a little something about it. It is a phased array system that puts out 3 or 4 megawatts of power.
Mm-hmm.
And as a phased array system, I assume they control the various elements of the phased array, so they can produce electromagnetic effects that are localized in space and time in various parts of the world. They can produce a little spot maybe a few miles wide over a certain area and thus produce certain kinds of phenomena. Basically, I think they're heating the ionosphere and producing ionic effects, plasma-like effects, heating the ionosphere. Now, as to whether or not that is got some nefarious kind of whether or not there's some kind of nefarious activity associated with HARP, I cannot say for certain, but my opinion is that there is no nefarious activity. I do believe they're investigating the effects of heating the ionosphere with electromagnetic waves, and that could have military weapons application. It could have other applications for blocking communications from satellites. It could even be used possibly to disable satellites. But I don't think that it's being used to control the population, to induce mind control kind of things or anything like that. I think it's either benign or semi-benign. Now,
well,
I don't think
even those who have built HARP and are currently experimenting with it acknowledge that certain aspects of it could affect the physiology of human beings.
Well, I believe that's true, but now as to whether or not it's actually being used to do that, I don't know. I don't think my guess is that it wouldn't be, but you know, I'm not an expert in it. I don't – even the experts – I listen to the experts, Nick Begich, I believe you've had him on.
That's right.
I listen to him, but he does – there's a lack of technical information that would indicate to me that there is something nefarious. I mean, so my guess is that HARP is fairly benign. It has, I believe, military applications, but so does free energy. So does almost anything. So
right.
I would say my guess is that HARP is fairly benign. These
all
people
right.
that think that people HARP is controlling their thoughts and things like that, I think they're mistaken.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's move on to something else. As you know, I'm a ham radio operator, and in the course of wanting to put up the biggest antenna the world ever saw, for an amateur anyway, I put up 13 towers. And
wow.
A very, very, very great deal of wire.
Wow.
It's a double loop, and mm-hmm. it's gigantic. It's spread out over 5 acres. Now,
phew.
I have demonstrated to person after person after person that on a clear day,
a submarine communications kind of antenna.
on a clear day, Bob, with no clouds, mm-hmm. no wind.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing going on. I can consistently throw a large switch, which I put in because I wanted to take the antenna to ground when there was a storm around, mm-hmm. and I can get a blue arc about a half an inch to an inch long every time I close that switch. There's an enormous amount of voltage on that antenna, and even a fair amount of current. So I don't know where it comes from. I've heard various theories, Bob, for example, that there's at any given moment, lightning everywhere in the world, and that lightning is somehow, or some of the voltage from that lightning is being conducted through the atmosphere, and that antenna is collecting it. I've heard theories suggesting that the rotation of the Earth itself is producing the voltage. I've heard all kinds of theories, but I've never heard one that conclusively in any way proves what it is. I have no idea what it is. It was an unwanted side effect, but it's real. And where does it come from, Bob?
Well, Art, you've got a very interesting question in there. Now, this goes back. First, let me say that I don't think it's lightning. And I don't think it has anything to do with the Earth's rotation. It goes back to Nikola Tesla in about 05, 10, you know, somewhere in that region. Nikola Tesla got a patent for a radiant energy device that did work, that ran a machine. And he had an antenna and a mica capacitor. Very important that it's mica, because, well, but anyhow, mica capacitor, and then he had a discharge system, a spark gap. So he hooked his antenna to this special capacitor. The capacitor would charge up to high voltage. It would jump over the spark gap. It would do some work with the machine. And so he was running, he was using that antenna voltage to do work to, as a source of energy. And they call that energy radiant energy. And have ever since. Now, so maybe somebody did it before Nikola Tesla did it, but I don't know of it. So anyhow,
I believe that Tesla was suggesting that we didn't need to carry electricity in wires, that it could be transmitted through the air. Now, that was what he said, wasn't it?
That's true, and that is not consistent with most of what modern physics says either. Most physicists would say that's impossible. Now, let me just pause here for a minute. I'll get back to the antenna voltage. But Nikola Tesla was one of the greatest engineers that ever lived. When he did something, it worked. Very, very seldom, though, I think he built something and it didn't work. He was an extremely careful scientist. Now, he went out to Colorado Springs and did experiments out there with this transmission of power through the air. Now, I don't think that's quite right to say that he's transmitting power, but let's use that terminology for now. So basically, he did many tests to verify that his ideas were correct. Then he came back to the United States to Wardenclyffe in Shoreham, Long Island, and started to build a magnifying transmitter for which he was going to provide power for the whole Earth. Now, Nikola Tesla was not a crackpot. No matter what anybody says, we should be thanking our lucky stars that Nikola Tesla lived, because we have 60 cycle because of Nikola Tesla. We have the AC induction motor. You know, my refrigerator is running right now. What does it run on? It has a 60 cycle AC induction motor in it. Nikola Tesla had almost 1,000 patents. He was a brilliant man. He did not do things that were dumb. And so he was going to produce power to supply the whole world, and that violates many ideas of modern physics. But Nikola Tesla was not using the same laws of physics that we are using in America today.
Is that our problem, Bob, that what we call the laws of physics are simply not being looked beyond by the physicists that we have out there right now?
The real
hardware guys I'm talking about.
That's essentially correct. We use electrodynamics without gauge transformations. But you need, if you want to have free energy or if you want to have electrogravitic effects, these exotic phenomena, you must include gauge transformations. Now, this goes back to Maxwell's equations. They were apparently mistranslated early on. It gets complex, but basically, if you don't have gauge trans, if you don't include scalar waves, which I also call gauge waves, if you don't include gauge transformations, then your electrodynamics is incomplete. You cannot describe what happens to two canceling photons. Two canceling photons. What happens to the energy? So anyhow, okay, your antenna voltage.
All right, so we'll get back to that in just one second. So if you're talking to another physicist, one locked currently within the so-called laws of physics, you would tell him to look at what specifically?
What happens in canceling electromagnetic waves? Two photons. If you don't include gauge transformations, you don't have an answer. You have a violation of the laws of physics. You have a violation of energy conservation. Okay, again, if you have two photons, and you cancel each other. The electric and magnetic fields go to zero. Now, if the electric and magnetic fields go to zero, then the electromagnetic energy goes to zero because the electromagnetic energy is supposedly stored in the electric and magnetic fields.
Okay. How do you verify, how do you prove gauge transformations?
Well, you know, that's about the only way you can analyze these. Well, there are ways to do it. I don't know if I can do it right, discuss it right now. It's a little complex. I think maybe I've already gotten complex enough with some of this. But there are experiments that have been done and can be done, but they haven't been done by the mainstream physicists because there are some real knuckleheads that are physicists. You would think.
Well, what I'm asking you to do is, you are speaking to some of those knuckleheads right now. You're speaking to certainly a lot of the mainstream physics world, and I guess I need to.
I don't think the knuckleheads listen to you.
Oh, don't be. I think perhaps I think some are. And if you were to instruct them on how to proceed experimentally to prove what you're talking about, what do you say to them?
Okay, I would first say we don't need to do the experiment in the first instance. Just tell me what happens to two photons. Just think about two canceling photons and try to explain that without gauge transformations, and you'll find that you can't. As far as I know, and maybe I'm wrong. All right, listen, I make mistakes all the time. I've made every mistake that can be made in physics. That's how I learned. After I made all the, you know, not exactly, but anyhow, you know, I make mistakes. I'm willing to, if I'm wrong, Art, I'll come on and I'll tell you. I'll write you an email. I'll let you know. But I don't think I am. I'm pretty sure I'm right. And so.
Well, I'm just asking how we prove you're right.
Well, you do an experiment where there are gauge, where you can engineer gauge transformations, and you look at what happens. And what happens is basically, in these kinds of experiments, is you would generate energy. Now, actually, let me just be quite clear about this, Art.
Okay.
I believe in energy conservation. I'm not saying this violate these free energy devices violate energy conservation. I use energy conservation. I wouldn't know what to do with that energy and momentum conservation. But with these experiments, when they gain one unit of energy, they also generate at the same time 1 unit of negative energy, so that the total energy is mm-hmm. constant. You see what I mean?
Yes. I think I do.
If you gain energy, means the energy. Energy conservation tells us the energy is constant. So if we gain a unit of positive energy, then there's got to be a unit of negative energy produced at the same time. It's as simple as it gets.
Okay, and let us say you could document that. You could prove it. What would you then have?
If I could prove that gauge transformations generate energy.
That's right.
Then I would have, I would have proof for free energy.
Would you, in fact, have, at that point, free energy?
You would be producing free energy. You produce, and, you know, listen, some physicists will say, oh, this is all nonsense. Okay, listen, this is a serious subject. We've got gravely serious problems in this country with our economy.
No disagreement from me.
Oh, I know. I've heard you speak on the subject, Art. So let's be very serious about this. Let's don't just dismiss this out of hand and say, oh, that's all nonsense, which some physicists do, not all physicists, but some do. We've got to think about this. And I tell you something, Dr. Thomas Henry Moray was producing 50,000 watts of power from a tabletop unit. Stan Meyer was producing power. There are many people. But, you know, I don't know what happens. These people get gobbled up somehow. What happens is that...
Well, they don't get taken seriously, Doctor. That's what happens. If they were taken seriously... We're here at a break point, so hold tight. My guest is Dr. Robert Kuntz. And when we come back, what we're going to do is open the phone lines. And if you're a doubter, if you're a skeptic, or if you're one in agreement, we want to hear from you. This is a topic so important to America and the world. I'm Art Bell.